Today's Tuesday, June 20th.
I'm really excited about X299. I can't wait to talk about it. Oh my God, it's NDA. Woohoo!
Drink your Cosby, I mean your orange soda, and settle down. We have to do the news.
This tastes funny. The top story today, so we put it first, is Intel has announced, you know, Skylake X officially. Now, there have been a number of leaks around the internet from, you know, various different news sites because Intel is launching not just, you know, the i7, but also the i9. And we did sort of a little video on the X299 chipset, at least as far as the stuff that we were allowed to talk about. But, you know, here comes Anantech, you know, Dr. Kutras from Anantech with a pretty good article on the state of things as far as the, you know, low core count, medium core count, and high core count parts that are coming to the desktop or coming into at least the high-end desktop part of the market segment. Now, absent from this article are the Kaby Lake parts because the Kaby Lake parts have just been repackaged for the X299 socket. I don't think there's anything interesting there with the X299 CPUs that are based around the Kaby Lake microarchitecture. This article is just about Skylake X.
Also absent are the high core count chips because they don't exist yet, as far as anybody knows.
Yeah, 10 or 12 cores. And I think 10 cores is going to be available even before 12 cores. I'm not sure if they're going to be launching at the same time or not. I think that they're still finalizing the parameters of the 12-core part, let alone the 14, 16, and 18-core parts, which are, of course, a response to AMD's Threadripper part. Now, Intel would never admit that, but we all know. We all know.
Yeah, it seems pretty obvious. You do two every year until AMD does something crazy, and then you jump up by six.
Well, I don't think they really did two extra ones on the last cycle because they charged $1,700 for the desktop CPU. And it's like, well, I mean, I guess that's okay. Here's the situation that Intel found themselves in, though. If you were doing stuff with your desktop that would take advantage of more than six or eight cores, you would really benefit from having 16 cores on the desktop, AMD's Threadripper part that they announced a couple of months ago. So unlike gaming, where we talk about gaming and it's like, does gaming really use more than four cores? I don't know. It depends on the game, blah, blah, blah. If you use a computer to get work done and you're already using a lot of cores, you're already using one of these high-end CPUs in business because nobody's ever really talks about business. It's all, you know, all the content that is produced is aimed at the consumer, which I don't really understand because, you know, people should talk about it from a business standpoint. I mean, you can totally buy a lemon in business just as easy as a consumer part, and it's hard to know if you got ripped off or hard to know if you're overpaying.
I think it's probably like cars. Like, yeah, the individual person doesn't have a lot of choice in terms of what car their company gives them to drive.
Yeah.
Whereas you also don't have a lot of choice what CPU you're given to work with. So I think by driving the consumer interest, they can sort of influence that because those people are also personal consumers. So if you love Intel and you're the purchasing manager, you're going to get Intel.
Intel across the board. Well, things are getting really interesting in the CPU market, and it's really honestly very good for consumers either way because AMD has demonstrated that they have a viable product, even though it is a bit slower in some scenarios. But it's really, it seems to be there in the value proposition. But we won't know. I mean, Threadripper won't really be out until later this summer. So X299 is kind of launching first, at least the 10-core parts. But those higher core count parts will probably be here after Threadripper.
I think it'll bleed into being good for gamers as well. Because these companies are going to want to push these super-powered chips, those really expensive ones, and they're going to go to game companies and be like, listen, let us help you multi-thread. This is important. Let's do this. So, hopefully.
Now, like when AMD released the new Ryzen CPU, this CPU actually is a little different than previous generations in terms of like the microarchitecture and how things have been laid out on the CPU. Some people have said that they repackaged the Xeon line because, you know, before now you could get Xeon's 18, 22 cores, not really a big deal. But Intel was running into its own scalability problems in the enterprise with the internal layout on silicon. And so the layout here has changed. The amount of L2, L3 cache per CPU node has changed. There's all sorts of fun information. Unless you're a super duper industry insider, you haven't really had access to this information. And Intel being the global multinational that they are, you know, you don't really necessarily get the whole picture every time. You've got to play with the new parts. You've got to do some break-in with it, that kind of thing. So we're doing something a little different for our coverage. We're probably not going to have a lot of coverage immediately because, like with the Ryzen launch, it's like, oh, we've got a new UEFI. Oh, there's a tweak to this. Oh, you know, everything has changed here. That completely changes the performance characteristics. We're seeing, you know, an updated UEFI move metrics multiple percentage points in either way in benchmarks and diagnostics and things about the platform. So the coverage for us for X299 is probably going to trickle in over the next couple of weeks. It's probably not going to be immediate because we're hoping the platform matures a little bit so that it's not like with Ryzen where it's like, oh, well, all this stuff doesn't work. And then a week later, it's like, oh, they fixed that. It's like, oh, the performance difference is 10%. And then a month later, it's like, well, now it's like 5%. So, which is what happened with Ryzen. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting.
The moral of that story being, be cautious about early adoption. You know, it's easy to get on that hype train, but yeah. You know, it's going to be 3-4 weeks before all that gets ironed out. Now, if you're crazy about, you know, jumping in there and getting your hands dirty and being the first to post it, it's like, oh, look what I found about it. Then, but if you just want it to work, maybe wait, see what it's going to offer.
If you got this kind of money to spend on a CPU motherboard combination, you owe it to yourself to wait just a little bit longer, because for the first time in 5 or 6 years, we've got a fight on our hands, fellas. It's going to be neat. Well, in other security news, this is kind of a follow-up, but there's actually more new information about the CIA hacking toolkit. And so this is also at the top of the list. If you're running a router in this list, you need to check it. You probably are. It can be co-opted by the CIA, and the bad guys may have the tools necessary to do it.
They call this one Cherry Blossom. They didn't do a leak last week. They skip a week sometimes. No one knows why. But Cherry Blossom will affect your consumer router. It will spy. It will act as a vector for malware infestation. And it will redirect some of your traffic if it so sees fit to do so. So if you have a consumer router in that list, it's totally possible that someone is watching. It might not be the CIA either.
This is not good. I mean, the CIA, of course, have had these tools. We talked about them co-opting televisions before. But now the tools for doing this to consumer-grade gear that is on the internet is probably out there. So you want to make sure that your firmware is fully up-to-date and your device is recent enough to have had a recent firmware update to hopefully patch these issues.
Now, CIA or WikiLeaks did not release it. They only released the documents reporting about it. So it's not like the shadow brokers, but you can't count on that to...
If WikiLeaks has got mean, you know, if WikiLeaks, if we compare WikiLeaks to someone of loose morals or something, I mean, it would be just a foregone conclusion that there's probably something there.
Well, the CIA might have stole it from somebody in the first place. I think they actually might have brought in, there's some indication that they brought in a third party to help with this one.
Wow.
A private sector company. So I wonder how their stock's going to be impacted by that.
Now, the severity of this vulnerability is probably as bad as the SMB V1 vulnerability that hit Windows. And the difference here is that Windows has got a really amazing command and control structure in place for updates. Microsoft can hit a button in Redmond and the updates will be deployed to all the Windows machines everywhere. This is a dozen plus manufacturers, potentially hundreds of devices. Those devices do not have an automatic update infrastructure. They do not have any kind of mechanism in place for dealing with this centrally. That is a huge problem.
And instead of affecting one machine, this is going to affect everything on your network. So, time to buy a new router.
Yeah. We've actually had people on the forum doing tests with their cable modem. There are people that actually right now today on our forum have cable modems that are infected with malware, and their ISP does not seem to be interested in doing anything about it, even though their cable modems are participating in denial of service attacks and all sorts of crazy stuff. That'll probably get cleaned up, but we're talking about a month's or year's time scale and not an hour's or day's time scale that you need to prevent these types of zero-day attacks. So, Dubai Airport face recognition system. You can do this to get through customs and check in, travel document, whatever. So, that's neat.
They refer to these as biometric tunnels, which is an interesting mental image. So a biometric tunnel, as you walk through it, will interface with your passport, and it will scan your face, and it will compare the two things, and it'll, you know, make sure the chip on your passport's reporting certain things or whatever, and it looks at you. And this bypasses the whole check-in process with a human being. So you just, as you're moving through the tunnel, you're being scanned. When you're out the other side, go on your way.
You know, I'm thinking of, when I was reading the article and trying to imagine this in my head, the other place that I've seen this is like on cattle lines. So like they herd the cattle in, and if the cattle, you know, something, whatever, a gate opens and the cattle's herded a different way. So it's like, oh, they can't read your passports. You know, it's like maybe you've got a foil lined thing or your face doesn't match up, or, you know, maybe you've lost some weight or something. So the biometric tunnel's getting some different biometric data than it should. And so you look and you hear the clank at the end of the tunnel, and, you know, then your heart starts racing, and then their little things go off because it's like, uh-oh, that person's heart rate went up. Is that normal? Is this person a terrorist or whatever? And then you go a different way at the end of the tunnel.
So not only is this Orwellian, obviously, but it completely replaces the human beings doing those jobs. So once again, robots taking jobs. This really hits a couple of different notes on the you know, future dystopia scale.
I wonder if it's going to be like in Papers, Please, where there still is a human element for, like, if you don't make it through the machine part of it, but that's the one person that eventually gets just completely overwhelmed and just can't do the job properly.
I mean, it probably will be like the chute that you go down when you fail the biometric tunnel. It's going to be just cameras, and one person's monitoring, you know, 50 different cameras.
Didn't we also see that in the Willy Wonka movie, the one with Gene Wilder? It's like the kids did something wrong and they went down a chute or something. I don't know. It'll be like that.
I don't remember that one.
Oh, the biggest threat to industrial control systems since Stuxnet. It's called the Industroyer. Industroyer.
What a clever name. So if you don't remember Stuxnet was a type of malware that affected nuclear plants. And it was really insidious because it didn't stop the nuclear plants from working. It made them report that everything was okay, when in fact, everything was not okay, which is pretty dangerous with a nuclear plant.
Yeah, it was nuclear enrichment, and it was like, everything is fine with the centrifuges. And meanwhile, the centrifuges were destroying themselves. It was pretty amazing.
Now, it's not been confirmed, but recently we reported on in the Ukraine. It's not the Ukraine, it's just Ukraine, but I always say the Ukraine. So if you're from Ukraine, I'm sorry.
The Mexico.
They had a power outage that was caused by some sort of DDoS attack or whatever. They're saying that this was probably responsible, although it's not been confirmed. So the way these things work are it's a malware, but because these systems were built a long time ago, whoever built these didn't know the internet was going to be a thing. So the instruction sets are out there in the public, and there's no authentication, no protection. It's just like, give me instructions, and I will make drastic changes to the power infrastructure. So once you get something like this in place, you can do whatever you want, and it's easy to sort of cascade in these commands that makes it harm itself.
So what you're saying is I should not put technology from the previous, I don't know, 5 decades on the internet because it was not designed for that?
Yeah. Maybe the electrical infrastructure is not Internet of Things candidate.
But we need to turn this into a way that an average citizen can understand this. It's like, we're going to send a kitten to space with no spacesuit over and over again, hoping for a different result. And it's like, well, wait, a kitten into space? No, well, they'll freeze to death, and it'll be bad, and their eyes it'll just be like just a horrible, horrible thing. It's like, yes, a kitten was not designed to operate in space, in much the same way these programmable logic controllers were not designed to operate on the internet. Just saying.
But we could save a human a trip. It'll be so much more convenient if the kitten would repair the space station.
Load up Fluffy into the space trebuchet. Facebook. So Facebook has this thing where they've got a content moderation squad, and they filter things that are probably bad, including terrorist material. Well, Facebook keeps an audit log of who removes what and may have accidentally exposed those moderators to terrorists.
Not may have.
Did in fact.
For sure they did. So when somebody, it's kind of like a shadow ban type of thing where they don't tell you, hey, we think you're a terrorist, you've been banned. They just shut it down. Well, they didn't realize that the act of shutting it down puts you in the feed of the terrorist that you've shut down. And the terrorists, of course, now the person you banned couldn't see it, but anybody still in the group could see that thing happen as an activity. And sure enough, the terrorists noticed. And some of these people are now in hiding and fearful for their lives.
Yeah, Facebook was like, yeah, it for sure looks like these suspected terrorists access the individual profiles of these content moderators. So, whoops.
Now, these are almost always people in the countries where these things are happening. You know, it's not somebody at the Facebook campus looking into this. It's like people they get that are there in the mix and maybe even known to these terrorists. So it's a huge danger. And Facebook is, you know, kind of like not really making a statement about it. They're like, well, yeah, that was a bad thing, but they haven't said what they're going to do about it.
I think the article actually mentions that some of the people exposed were actually members of a prominent European counterterrorism unit. So the, you know, I don't know if that is law enforcement affiliated, but if there were people in law enforcement that were exposed as a result of this, there are going to be inquiries and meetings from now until next year, probably.
Yeah, that's probably not going to be good for Facebook in Europe. They already don't tolerate them very well. Hard to feel bad for them, though. That is a really stupid error.
Well, Facebook could clearly come up with an AI to deal with this, right? They're coming up with AI for other things. So Facebook has built an AI system, and that AI system has learned to lie. Now, the more disturbing thing in this one for me was that what they're training the AI to do is not really any of this terrorism stuff, but they're actually trying to build a personal assistant robot on Facebook that will do things like haggle for you over, like, you know, trading goods and things. So, like, if you want to buy something from somebody on Facebook or somebody wants to post that they have something for sale on Facebook, you could train your digital personal assistant bot on Facebook to haggle with them for a better price, I guess.
So this system took common everyday items, and it would arbitrarily give each AI a level of desire for those items. So, like, you really want pencil, you don't care much about book, you desperately want soccer ball. And then other AIs would have different preferences, and they would begin to haggle. So the AI would try to get rid of what it doesn't want and get what it wants. And the other AI is also trying to do that. And so what they didn't really expect, and where it learned to lie, was it actually figured out that the best possible way to go about this was to sometimes place false emphasis on items it didn't care about. So it would pretend to want book, when in fact it wanted book not at all.
It's like, oh, I really want that, but I guess we can't, you know, can't come to a price on that. I guess I'll take this other thing as a consolation prize. Exactly. It's like,
and this the AI worked exactly like the AlphaGo AI, where it would look at every possible combination. So it would think about, like, okay, if I make this offer, what are all the possible counteroffers I might get, and how will I react to that? So it was sort of, you know, just playing a 56-dimensional chess the entire time, and each AI was doing it, and eventually they learned to lie.
Neat. I wonder if you could blame Facebook AI for posting things on your timeline to get out of the death penalty.
something tells me no. I think this is the second time or third this has happened, right?
Yeah. So shame on Western media. We're going to put this guy to death for blasphemy on Facebook. But it wasn't me. It was the AI, honestly.
Now, this is a funny definition of blasphemy when you read about the story. You would think this would be like, you know, some atheist who was like standing his ground or whatever. No. So there's the Sunni-Shia divide, and this was an argument over the interpretation of Islam. So they were arguing about some interpretation about it. I guess for the Western world, this would be like if a Catholic and a Protestant were on Facebook arguing about the Holy Trinity and what that means, and the Catholic happened to work for the NSA, so the Protestant gets the death penalty. That's literally what happened here. And that's pretty crazy. Because
if somebody can translate this for us and let us know, that would be good, because it's hard to believe that that would happen that way. But, oh my God, why is this? I mean, if I were Mark Zuckerberg, I would just be like, I can't. Your country is too, I'm going to just turn off the internet or turn off Facebook for your, I can't participate in this. This is completely nuts.
But you can serve all those ads. Yeah, I think this comes down to more corruption. It's a crazy law. I think we can agree on that. I mean, death penalty for blasphemy, that's crazy. But I think this is more about the investigator wanting to win an argument and being willing to just, you know, use the full force of the law against this guy to do it.
Well, if you're going to do the death penalty for posting things to Facebook, I mean, it should at least be spam or something.
It should be those people that's like, I'm earning $5,000 a week working from home. That should be a death penalty.
Well, Germany will soon know who is responsible for those posts because they're going to fingerprint children and spy on them. This, I think, is more about the psychological effect of doing this, to get children used to this level of invasiveness, because I get the feeling that, especially in Europe, there are a lot of citizens in Europe that push back against this kind of, like, spying on both the corporate and government sides of the aisle. And so it's like, well, maybe if we get children early, they'll just be used to it.
Well, they're specifically targeting refugee children here with this policy. It'll apply to everybody, but they're using the refugee children as an excuse. And they're also blaming the terrorist refugee thing for the spying. They're like, oh, they're using this encryption, and, you know, encryption, it's got what terrorists crave. And so they're saying, you know, we bring these kids in, we got to fingerprint them so we can keep track of them and all that stuff. But you're right in terms of you're bringing in a huge percentage of a new population into your country. You're getting them started early, teaching them, hey, this is how things go now. We are going to spy on you. And eventually you have a very malleable population of new people.
Well, Japan wants in on the action because they've got a new law that lets police arrest and surveil people that are planning or discussing certain acts like copyright violation.
Yeah, this is now the best one about this. They give you a list of things that's like you can't do these things. One of them is collecting mushrooms. and so the obvious question is, how is collecting mushrooms criminal? And they explain that, so they have these, you know, Japan's a small place with a lot of people. So they have these conservatories where you can't take things out of them, and people apparently steal mushrooms from those to eat. And they say that collecting those rare mushrooms could be sold to support terrorism and things like that, as could copyright violation. If you're selling copyright material, that money could go to terrorism.
Wow. It's hard for me to imagine a terrorist selling, you know, pirate Britney Spears DVDs to support their operation. It's just, that is a bridge too far, I think.
Let me get 3 Miley Cyrus CDs and a mushroom, and praise Allah.
Oh, there come the downvotes.
Of course, we should mention that the Olympics are coming to Japan in 2020, so the real reason for this is because they want a absolutely pristine environment for the Olympics. The world's going to be watching, and they want an excuse to get rid of any, because, you know, a lot of people don't like certain things that are going on in Japan, and they might be planning a protest. Well, if you even plan a protest, that's another one of these things. If you just talk about it, you are now, it's totally
potentially
okay.
Subject to surveillance.
Yeah, you can be watched, and you will be watched.
I don't know. It's like, we're going to spy on you for wrong thing. I don't know. You got a Raspberry Pi, you got a Raspberry Pi that's on the internet, a Raspberry Pi that is participating in an Internet of Things device. Well, has it been slower than usual lately? It might be mining some type of cryptocurrency.
Very, very slowly. But if you get 1 million of them working together, this affects, if you have never changed the standard Pi account that comes with your Raspberry Pi, if you've never changed that password, then they're going to get in there and they're going to immediately have your Pi slaving away for the crypto coins.
Wow, you could get like 3 pennies a day on a Raspberry Pi. Maybe not even that.
How many Raspberry Pis are out there though with a default password?
Now there's hacker groups vying for control of your Raspberry Pi. How long before hacker groups are vying for control of your thermostat and your baby monitor and your Samsung television? Samsung left millions vulnerable to hackers because it forgot to renew a domain. Now there's a doomsday scenario for you. Big company, their device is phone home. It's like that whole global update thing we were talking about before. And, oh, they didn't renew a domain. Now hackers have control of that domain. Now hackers could actually roll out something to everything. It would be like Microsoft forgetting to renew a domain. And all of a sudden, all of the Windows computers on planet Earth that have automatic updates could get whatever arbitrary thing a hacker wants.
Now, that didn't happen. Some enterprising individual spotted it and immediately bought the domain and let everybody know, and, you know, just sort of like, hey, look how stupid Samsung is. And he started logging how many phones were actually calling his new domain and asking for things, and it was quite a bit. This is an old Samsung phone from 2014, but it turns out people are still using them. And he claims that he could send out a lot of different things, that this software could do a lot of things to the phone. Samsung denies it. So, I don't know. He has offered to give it back to Samsung. I don't think he's asking for anything in return either.
Well, no good deed goes unpunished because...
they'll probably sue him for it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that guy that we talked about a couple of weeks ago that had the WannaCry ransomware, that he bought the domain, which was the kill switch for whatever. All of his computers have been seized by at least one, maybe two different law enforcement agencies. And it's just like, come on, guys.
It really is, how dare you be smarter than us? What were you thinking?
We've covered this story before, but this is sort of a follow-up on a follow-up. So we talked a little bit about Munich, and Munich has, you know, they moved to Linux a number of years ago, but, you know, it's like Linux is too much of a success story. If it catches on there, it's like the more you tighten your grip, the more star systems will slip through your fingers, kind of a thing. So they're still running Linux, but there was talk of maybe moving them back to Windows.
There was a huge push, and they've not been able to explain what we get from going back to Windows, other than the bag of money for whoever gets that done.
I think Microsoft has almost been willing to do it for no licensing costs. It's just down to labor costs at this point because they're like,
makes sense.
You know.
But the Green Party is pushing back because they're like, hey, you know this stupid thing that you want to do? Look at the WannaCry attack. We were completely unaffected by that. Isn't that a good indication that this was a smart move? But they are a minority party, I think, so I don't know how much traction they're going to get.
The other interesting argument now is that it was not made in this case, I think, but I think that we will start to see it made, is that you aren't sure that Microsoft has been co-opted by the intelligence organization. You are not sure that some programs that you use have not been co-opted by some state organization or a weakness introduced or something like that. Certainly the security vulnerabilities that we have seen in both Linux and Windows indicate that you can have really bad security issues that linger for years. And even with Linux being open source, some of those issues have persisted for quite a long time. It's a really interesting situation.
So you're saying that maybe software companies in the U.S. might be sort of coerced or strong-armed by the intelligence agencies to introduce weaknesses?
I think that happens more often than we realize.
And what proof do we have?
Well, there's this guy on Twitter. His name is Pavel Durov, and he's one of the guys that, I think one of the founding guys that works on an instant messaging program called Telegram.
Yes.
And Telegram is of Russian origin, or Russian software company or whatever, but it aims to have pretty good security for instant messaging and things like that. So it's an encrypted instant messaging program, but it's out of Russia. And so some people have looked at the Telegram code in the past and found it not to be as secure as advertised, maybe with weaknesses. So I don't think it's unreasonable to think that, you know, if U.S. firms are putting pressure on software firms in America to do stuff, maybe the Russian equivalents are putting pressure on companies in Russia to do the same. But it certainly illustrates that, you know, this happens at least in America, probably also on a global scale. So this is a really interesting thing.
Or the Russian agencies already got to this guy. And this is, you know, sort of like...
just subterfuge?
Yeah, yeah. He's just, you know, misinformation. Who knows how deep it goes. It doesn't surprise me at all if this happened. You know, he claims that his devs, that someone tried to bribe his devs. And then the FBI just came to him directly and was like, listen, we want a backdoor. So... You got to wonder, how is Microsoft responding? Because they're definitely getting those same offers.
Oh dear! Even with open source, like it's like this is why we need open source. That's kind of turning out to be kind of a disingenuous argument. It will be a good argument in the future. But we've kind of had a wake-up call lately between the SSL library problems and SMBv1 and problems with NTP and problems with things that go back many years, if not dozens of years, indicate that you can have pervasive security issues that will compromise the entire machine, even in the open source arena. But I think now that we've had a wake-up call, I think that open source's track record is going to improve. And I see no indicator that things are going to improve in the commercial world, if other than lip service to have companies have a better shot at an international market. So like Cisco and Juniper are freaking out, not because they think backdoors are a bad thing, but because I think that they're worried about their market share. With open source, I think we see a lot of developers that are like, how can we architecturally engineer this so that it is impossible to obfuscate a security issue?
Well, if you're a regular watcher of this news program, we've talked about Heesung before and his nephew. Heesung
being the prodigal programmer that does all the things.
Right. Heesung being the Chinese entrepreneur who sells these horrible Internet of Things devices, and Heesung being his nephew who has no training in computer science, but is working very cheaply. Well, it looks like Heesung might be out of a job.
Oh, there's we talked about Mirai, and we talked about the Mirai-infected webcams. That was a botnet, and so all these webcams that have been taken over and used for bad things. Now, these webcams actually had quite a bit of computational horsepower because they were designed to deal with video. So if you turn that toward denial of service or cryptocurrency, these are actually pretty viable devices for doing stuff with that. So now, one of the leading Chinese companies that was doing this is actually working with a third-party security company to try to tighten things up a bit. This is great.
Yeah, I think, though, just like you were talking about with the closed source companies, this is total knee jerk. This is like, oh God, orders are down 75%. Get the nephew out of here. We must do something to fix this.
We're going to have to adopt a real software development methodology. Yeah. What is this blasphemy? I don't know.
So. But it's probably good news. At least this is, you know, we talk about a free market. This is what happens with a free market. When you do something really stupid, you will be punished by the market, and it's okay. You don't need the government to come in and be like, we must control, give us a backdoor, we must control it all. No, just crappy products will not get purchased if you let the free market work.
Pretty much, yeah. But, you know, the NSA has linked WannaCry to North Korea, so that's a thing.
Now, we must think back to one of the past CIA leaks where they had software specifically designed to make it look like malware came from a specific country. And now we have the NSA saying, for sure this was North Korea. Had to be. Couldn't have been anybody else.
Oh, so take that with a grain of salt.
Now, one interesting thing here is apparently they're saying that this was like a premature version. Like it got loose too early. And one of the problems was the way the Bitcoin addresses and stuff that they used are easily trackable. Like they can watch the blockchain now, and as soon as these get spent, they're going to know exactly who it came from. So all that, I think 140,000 they ended up with, none of it's been spent yet because they probably know that as well.
Whoops. I thought that the actual malware part of it, including like the kill switch domain thing, was basically unmodified from the original CIA NSA source.
But I think in terms of like the payments.
Oh, okay.
They also revealed that it turns out they didn't know. They couldn't for sure say whether or not you'd paid or not. So they were just kind of like looking at the blockchain. It's like, okay, you said you paid and we see a transaction, so here's your password. They couldn't really confirm. So you could have faked them out if you wanted.
Neat, I guess. Well, that's I know some people that are probably going to send some emails. Probably too late.
Yeah.
Oh, this is kind of a follow-up story late in the program. So Kim.com, we've talked about him. He was running the Mega Upload service. He had his company paid another company to do hosting, web hosting. And that company had some of its servers located in Virginia. And so, of course, that gives the U.S. jurisdiction because that's totally not sarcastic at all. And so they seized all the servers, and they also seized Kim.com's assets because people were uploading copyrighted material to his file sharing service. And, you know, the service may have been designed to monetarily incentivize popular files on the service regardless of whether or not they were copyrighted. They may have taken a laissez-faire attitude toward trying to police whether or not people were uploading copyrighted files. And so all of this, the U.S. government says, is evidence of a criminal wrongdoing and gross criminal conduct and blah, blah, blah. So he's never set foot in the U.S. He's never technically had an operation in the U.S. He's never really participated in U.S. business directly. And so he's been fighting extradition from New Zealand for the better part of 5 years.
But what he's lost here is $43 million. That's how much they took, seized of his assets that were in the United States. And this was an appeal to get that back because he was basically saying, hey, you really don't have a case for stealing my money because of all the things that you just outlined.
Well, I think the money was actually in Hong Kong originally.
Well, they got it somehow. It's here now. So what they've said is, no, I'm sorry, you're never getting your $43 million back. It's ours now. And eventually we will put you in jail.
There was a ruling recently in New Zealand that said he was eligible to be extradited from New Zealand to the United States, but he's fighting that tooth and nail, and so there has not been a final ruling on that yet.
He still has considerable resources. It shows that you can purchase freedom in most cases, and at least temporarily you can purchase freedom, but if it's against the government, it might be that no amount of money can save you. I mean, the justice system is for the rich, but being rich and being in the government wins most of the time.
If you're a Mac user and you've made it through the news this far, congratulations. You have an attention span that is much higher than the normal Mac user attention span, at least according to our Google Analytics. I'm just saying, our Google Analytics says that your attention span is much higher.
Empirical evidence would also suggest.
Here come the downvotes. But this news story is interesting. Apple Mac computers are now being targeted by ransomware and spyware. So this is something that you should read. I have a little rant on the hardware architecture engineering on the Mac side that I don't very often get to espouse. And that is, Apple, I think their best engineers have been working on mobile. And so I think that the kernel and the base level operating system stuff in Mac OS has been allowed to, certain problems have been allowed to fester in it. And I don't think that Apple is really handling things properly in their operating system. And so I think right now, as it exists today, the security level internal to the Mac OS operating system, even though it has a Unix, you know, it's got its Unix history, which is very good, effectively the security is probably somewhere between Windows XP and Vista. I will concede it's not as bad as Windows XP, but Vista is probably better in its current state, in my opinion, for a variety of reasons. There are also a lot of open source utilities that are bundled with Mac OS, but Apple's been kind of hostile or adopting more recent versions of things that are open source because they don't really want to play with the open source licenses. They don't really want to contribute back from what I'm seeing in terms of the projects that they have used and the projects that they've added onto. Now, they've contributed some source code in some places really well, but I think Apple is afraid that if they make the state of the art better for some of the open source stuff that they use, that people will be less inclined to participate in the Mac experience. And so this malware is going to capitalize on that in a big way. And so I think that Apple users are in for a world of hurt the next 2 or 3 years unless Apple really dedicates some really top-shelf operating system engineers to their product in the next couple of years.
Now, this malware is for sale on the darknet, and it's really primitive versions of the WannaCry type experience and another spyware type of thing, but really primitive. Clearly, somebody got it and just did the base level that it requires to convert it to Mac and put it up for sale. One of the interesting things about the ransomware version of this is the encryption is really weak. So you could probably put it back together eventually. The other thing is, it doesn't look like they can actually decrypt it. So
congratulations.
Yeah, so you're gonna pay and it ain't going to matter. But yeah, this is like somebody who, these are not criminal masterminds. Well, there might be criminal masterminds. They're not technical masterminds. They've done just enough. It's like, hey, look how successful that was with Windows. What other market could we hit with that? So for sale if you want to buy a copy.
The bad news is that Unix underbelly of OS X is really great for making those machines part of a command and control infrastructure in terms of remote access, remote control, being able to remotely call off the machine and do really amazing stuff, much better than Windows, in my opinion. But the bad news is that the security and hardening is not there, and being able to suss out what's part of the operating system, what's part of an application, and what is part of malware is really not there. And it's gotten there a little bit. Like, they're doing the application signing to where you can say, like, this kernel module must be signed and some other stuff. So there have been some incremental improvements, but most of those things are superficial. Like, if you know about some undocumented parts of the kernel, or you know about a couple other things, it is possible to get arbitrary code to run, you know, in the kernel, but it's mitigated by the fact that it's hard to get to through applications like Safari, the PDF reader, and things like that. But there are so many holes in the desktop applications that as soon as those holes are found, it's going to be easy to escalate your permissions, I think, just because the software engineering is not there to make the thing robust from the ground up. There's going to be a ton of loopholes. So We'll see. We'll see if I'm right in the next couple of years. We'll see. It'll be interesting. Switching gears a little bit, Netflix has more American subscribers than cable TV, and the cable TV industry is wigging out as a result.
We talked about last week with the cable lobbyist who just said, I think the quote was, the cable industry is dying. I imagine he saw this data before we did and wanted to get out in front of it. So it's like, you know, let me try to spin this. I don't know how you spin it, but yes, discounting things like the sling boxes and satellite TVs, there are more Netflix subscribers in America than there are, and I think that's entire North America, not just the U.S., than there are subscriptions to cable television. It's amazing.
Well, cable TV is like, you know, I don't know. If you, cable internet, let's say, is $50 to $100 a month. Cable TV is $50 to $100 a month. Netflix is like $13.
I think you can get it for $8, I think. You get the like the low res single plan. Yeah, it's real cheap.
There you go, cable TV. Those are the margins you got to work with. I think if you lower your bill to $13, you'll have something.
Now, the last time I re-upped my internet service, I was paying like $100 a month for the fastest they'd give me. And they were like, please take television. And I was like, why would I take television? They're like, we'll give you, if you take television with your same internet plan, it'll be $70. So my my television service was negative $30. And I still didn't want it, but I took it. I mean, I haven't ever plugged it in.
Well, we mentioned this a little earlier, but Microsoft is actually going to disable SMB V1 in Windows entirely starting this fall. So the protocol is just fundamentally broken. It can be co-opted by bad guys. If you have anything running SMB 1 just naked on the internet, you need to just go ahead and turn that off.
Yeah, we've seen SMB-related stuff on Linux and Windows recently. Huge problems. And so my favorite part about that story was the one Microsoft engineer. And, like, he's just constantly tweeting hate about SMB1. Like, it's his personal crusade to get rid of it. So I'm sure he's feeling good about this.
It's one of the last vestiges of Windows 3.1, so.
It's going to be harder to share my files.
In Microsoft's unstoppable quest to become more like Apple, they've also adopted Apple's device building protocols. So there's the new Surface laptop, but iFixit gave it a 0 out of 10. But if you read the thing, they're like, if we could have given it a negative 1 out of 10, we would have.
There are no screws. No screws. It is a plastic solder that holds the whole thing together. You must literally snap it in half. And once you get inside, more plastic solder and glue. You can't change anything. Can't change the RAM. Can't change the hard drive. Nothing. Nothing in this thing is upgradable or repairable. It's literally, basically, just sealed shut.
Plastic soldering. That is insane. Why would you do that? Why would you do that? That doesn't...
Because you don't want somebody to upgrade it. You want them to buy another one in 2 years.
I'd also like to point out that the i5 with 128 gigs of storage and 4 gigs of RAM is over $1,000. That is not a good deal. That is a terrible deal. That is an extremely, extremely terrible deal.
That's crazy. Like, we're not going to give you any storage and forget about upgrading it. You know, that's
you can put it on an SD card. It's like, no, no. Is it even SDXC? I mean, come on. It's probably not.
It doesn't matter if it is or not. That's insane.
I'm gonna put a page file on an SD card because maybe that'll be faster. I don't. Yeah, it's $1,000 for something with 4 gigs of RAM in 2017.
And it's not Apple.
And it's not Apple. I mean, that's just... So, if Mazda cars were on the internet, and they were part of the Internet of Things, you would be able to co-opt them. But as it stands, you just need a USB flash drive, and you can totally take over them.
Now, this is not totally fake news, but Mazda has fixed it. Now, of course, there is no way for them to roll out the fix to you unless you take it to a dealership and have them do it. And your average Mazda consumer, I imagine, has no clue about that. But this thing will literally execute any command that you put in a script file on a USB drive. There is no button push. There is no click. You start the car. You plug it in. It will run whatever you put on there.
And, yeah.
Now, the car must be running or in service mode. I'm not sure how you put it in service mode. I imagine it's like an ignition thing. So you do have to have the key. You can't steal a car with this, as far as they know. But you can do a lot of other cool things with it. And actually, on the Mazda forums, if you own a Mazda, they've been doing some fun stuff with it to customize their cars. So, you know, maybe you can add some features.
If the hole is that large, I guarantee that there are other holes elsewhere. It's just a matter of digging and finding them, because, good Lord, that is insane.
Yeah, that's, and I bet that the all these cars, the first time, well, we've already got cars on the internet. Are Tesla, are they on the internet?
Yep.
So the other car companies are not going to think like, how should we harden our cars before we go on the internet? They're going to think, oh my God, we have to be on the internet right now. Call Hee Sung. I hear he's got a script.
He's out of work.
He's looking for a job. But Toyota's going to hire him tomorrow.
It's going to be, and then you're going to, it's like, you know, it's like local 13-year-old boy bricks all Toyota Priuses in North America. Like, those are the headlines of tomorrow. This is the direction that we're headed. It would be cool if you could send a firmware update to the Roomba for your garden and make it, you know, start pulling up your azaleas, I guess. I don't know.
So this is the guy that, I don't know if he was solely responsible for the Roomba, but he worked for the iRobot company, and he claims he invented it. He's come up with this weeding robot. Now, he's invented a couple of robots on his own. He left iRobot. He's got Franklin Robotics. His name's something Franklin. Not so successful. And when I read into this, I thought, wow, weeding robot. So it's going to have, like, advanced cameras and weed recognition technology? No. It's got a little, like, inch-high bumper. If the inch-high bumper can go over a plant, it plucks it. If the plant is higher than an inch, it runs into it and redirects itself, just like the Roomba with the... So you have to take your saplings and seedlings and put them in these little mesh cages so that the weed robot does not pluck them out. That doesn't sound very good to me. I don't think that's a good robot.
Well, they had to do it cheaply because otherwise, you know, the robot with the advanced vision system is probably also going to have like an NVIDIA 1080 Ti on board to be able to do the type of image recognition that we're talking about.
And it has to operate outdoors. The cool thing about the one nice thing is it's solar powered and it can just live outdoors. So you don't have to like bring it in at night.
I think we just figured out why the Vega is called the Frontier Edition. It's going to be part of outdoor robots.
I'm going to put it in those Boston Dynamics dog robots.
They're putting one in a Boston Dynamics robot, and it's going to be the first robot to scale Mount Everest. That's why they're calling it the Frontier Edition. You heard it here first.
It's going to scale Mount Everest, and that's going to be like a Tomb Raider promotion. Because it's going to be able to play Tomb Raider when it gets to the top.
I think even in the really crappy Tomb Raider movie from like the 2000s with Angelina Jolie, they had a big dog style robot, but they were just using it for combat training, and it was like that's the dumbest thing in the world. You should totally send that robot in for all these booby trapped. You know, you imagine that the robot, the big dog style robot, is like, you know, in a trap system in like Indiana Jones and the Holy Grail, and it's like, you know, they're going through the thing that chops off your head, and it's like, you know, the thing that's designed for flesh and bone encounters, you know, steel and wires, and it's like, okay, let's just move on to the next thing. It wouldn't really be a big deal.
So I can see another headline coming up. Sherpa communities are going to collapse because robots are going to take their jobs.
We need to call this guy that did the weeding robot and get him on the Mount Everest scaling Vega. You know,
the iSherpa?
Either the iSherpa or the archaeological robot where you can send them into like the booby-trapped tombs to find things. I guess booby-trapped tombs are probably in short supply, though.
But that's not a good career move. Huge return on investment if you can find treasure. So,
Amazon has been granted a patent that prevents in-store shoppers from online price checking?
This is irony of the week, I believe we would call that. Because, of course, it's very common when you go to a store such as Best Buy and see a thing that you like to hop on Amazon and check the price. Well, Amazon doesn't want you to do that in their stores?
I think that I wouldn't be surprised if Amazon uses this defensively because in Best Buy, for example, I'm not sure if they still have it, but there were some people that sued them about this. If you got on Best Buy's in-store Wi-Fi and went to the Best Buy website, you were not actually going to the Best Buy website on the public internet. You were going on another Best Buy website that looked and acted like the Best Buy website on the public internet, except that it never had any sales or discounts or coupons or anything like that. So if you were at home and you're like, oh, that thing that I've been wanting is on sale, and you went to the store and it was not on sale, and you looked it up on your phone and you happened to be on the Wi-Fi, it would be like, this device is not on sale. And then you start to have, you know, an existential crisis, and it's like, I don't know. And there was a movie made about this, and there's a term called gaslighting. So it's like Best Buy was totally gaslighting you. And then you get back home, and it's like, wait, it is on sale. I don't know. Oh, the Wi-Fi, they got me. Oh. So this is like that, maybe. Maybe they'll use it defensively.
So moral of the story is don't ever get on free Wi-Fi when you're shopping. Use your data plan. And you're probably going to save money, even if you use a lot of data.
Now, depending on when they filed, Best Buy may have actually beaten them to the punch on this, because Best Buy was doing that a long time ago.
There's also the whole, we didn't cover it, but Amazon, of course, bought Whole Foods. And it seems like the reason they bought Whole Foods is not because they care about Whole Foods, but because they want stores and upscale communities across the country. And if they're looking at opening up brick and mortar, this might be something they use there.
It's going to be an interesting couple of years. I'm sure we'll report on that again soon. Tesla, the Model X, is the first SUV ever to achieve a 5-star crash rating in every category. I love this. I love this because a lot of the time people from the old auto industry are like, ah, Tesla, ah. But it's actually one of the safest vehicles on the road.
I don't love this because I hate SUVs. SUV drivers are terrible people. And this is just going to make them more confident to be terrors on the road because it's like, oh, I have a literal tank. Now, it's important to note that other SUVs have done pretty good at like the roll cages and the impacts and stuff like that. But the thing about an SUV is it's a big piece of shit on wheels and it rolls over if you take a turn. But this thing has a giant piece of lead under it. So it doesn't roll over no matter what you do. So that's why.
It's lead and lithium. Thank you very much.
So, yeah, it's you can power slide one of these things. And that's the reason it gets the super rating. But it really is the best ever.
It's impossible to see over, around, or through them. So in tight traffic, it is also difficult in that regard. So, you know, it's not that you hate people that drive SUVs. Downvotes. Welcome, downvotes. Take a number, please. Thank you. I like when we talk about products that are silly. So here's a product that was kind of silly. It's like a Hello sleep tracker. This was a Kickstarter and also a product. And they got $2.4 million and another $40.5 million in venture capital and failed.
Going away. The servers, unless they get acquired by a third party who's going to have to try to make money somehow, are going to be gone.
How did they spend this much money on a sleep tracker?
You gotta wonder about it.
If I were running everything on Amazon the most inefficient way possible, it's hard for me to imagine an AWS bill that would exceed this that would support their entire customer base.
Now, if you bought it at a retailer, they're telling you, go get your money back. But if you bought it from them, they're telling you, sorry, we can't give your money back.
Wow.
So if you Kickstarted this thing, you lost everything. Your product is useless. And this goes in the file of beware of Kickstarters.
And also Internet of Things devices, because they could have totally done this as a standalone app, and maybe it wouldn't have been as terrible.
And they probably have enough of that $40 million left to just go and say, like, okay, fine, store this on your local network, here's a patch. But, of course, they're not going to do that.
Even if they invested the money, like, okay, let's say $42 million. Let's say they put $2.5, $3 million toward product development, software engineering, and that kind of thing. They could literally invest the rest of it and just off the interest of the $40 million pay a staff sufficient to maintain that product, even if they had 2 or 3 million users.
I don't think that's how they did it. I think they probably got a company yacht, company plane, you know, just had a bunch of dinners.
I mean, it wouldn't have been lavish. There would definitely be some engineers in Bangalore and, you know, it would not be everybody with an Aeron chair or anything like that, but you totally could run a company to satisfy that customer base off of the interest from that kind of money alone.
It's important to note that the guy who did this was 22 years old. He did not have a formal education. He skipped college to do this because he got like a personal grant from somebody in America. So, yes, you might have a really good idea. It's debatable whether or not this was a really good idea. I think other people have done it better. But when you get a ton of money like that, it's often very difficult for someone inexperienced to understand how to handle that.
Moving right along. Uber CEO to take leave, have diminished role after scandals.
People were furious last week that we didn't do an Uber story. There was a little bit of an Uber story last week, but I don't think it was interesting enough to cover. But this is.
Yeah, so I think this is a better... this is sort of a microcosm of what's happening inside Silicon Valley right now, because it's sort of the old guard of Silicon Valley, and they're just like, was this wrong? Should we not have done that? So if you haven't been following this, Uber is basically almost in meltdown mode just from internal management and internal politics. They did some things they probably shouldn't have with a female person's medical records and maybe some sexual harassment. Don't know. That's gonna work its way out. But the Uber CEO is going to go on leave, and otherwise have a diminished role after you know, after all of this. And so Uber seems to be more concerned with subterfuge, and they're almost acting like a spy agency or something, because they're trying to spy on competitors, and they did some, I mean, Uber did all kinds of crazy stuff, and it's really...
Well, but the funny thing here is, all that crazy stuff is not what's taking them down. It's purely the sexism angle. Or at least that's this guy's problem. And you remember the YouTube video where he was like, it was just so arrogant, and like, he's a very hateable man. And you can sort of like see that, yeah, he probably did say a lot of these things and do a lot of these things. And that's the thing about a public company. You know, once you go public, you can't run it like it's your personal club anymore. You have to be accountable. And he doesn't seem to be able to get used to that, so he's got to go.
Wow, that's just another story. That's, I don't know. It's so oddly familiar. Verizon closes a $4.5 million acquisition of Yahoo. Marissa Mayer has resigned.
So you got a huge golden parachute. I think it was $23 million or something like that. And she immediately began bashing the Yahoo Mail services because she worked on Gmail. But yeah, this is bad in terms of, you know, consolidation of technology companies. It's not a good thing.
I think this is going to play out. Like, I want to know, like, what analyst, what advisor, does anybody have any links to reports or anything where I can read more about this? Because Time Warner bought AOL. That went down great. Just super. I want to know what analyst looked at this and said, this is going to go down completely differently from the whole Time Warner AOL thing, because this is going to go down exactly like the AOL Time Warner thing. How does an analyst not know that?
They're going to roll this in with, they have AOL too now, and they're rolling in all these companies here to something called Oath. So they have another, I guess, kind of like Google's doing Alphabet, you know, they're splitting it off. So yeah, it seems like Oath is a bunch of companies that nobody wants.
Well, if you're an investor that doesn't actually have any idea about technology, you might be able to look at this and be like, this could be a viable competitor to Google. I can sink $10 million here on the, you know, on the thing that it turns into $1 billion later.
With tech stocks in a historic bubble, now is the time to get in on that Oath IPO.
So if you work currently at Yahoo, or you previously worked at Yahoo, tell me if this is true or not. The really top shelf engineering talent at Yahoo had some super, super impressive engineers, and they did some super impressive stuff with technology in the early 2000s. In the early 2000s until around 2006 or 2007, that's when I really noticed the drop off. It seemed like the engineers came up with really brilliant stuff that was just really badly marketed and not really well executed and not really well presented to users, because it's like, if you get user adoption, it doesn't matter how bad management screws up. If you get users to use it, it's a win. It doesn't matter what management did, as long as the users are using it and liking it and can't live without it, which is what built Google. So, you know, tell me if I'm wrong, but I would say that most of the engineering talent, or most of your friends, or most of the people that you know, probably have exited from Yahoo and these other companies to go work elsewhere, because they don't really see how this is going to continue. So without that engineering talent, I don't know how this company will be viable.
Well, if they haven't gone yet, they probably will, because part of this deal, they're cutting 15% of the workforce.
Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, that's just, it's already starting out like the AOL Time Warner thing. Already starting out.
Now, we talked about Kickstarters. Don't fall for pie in the sky Kickstarters. Don't do it. Be smarter than that. Now, let's also think back to when the announcement was made that they're going to start selling your browsing data. What did we say? We said, don't give anybody money for this. This is stupid. They can't. They're going to buy it. They said, hey, here's a GoFundMe page. I want to buy Congress's records.
Well, no. we got to do a better explanation than that. It is, there was a, so in America, the FCC had sort of changed hands for somebody that has a different political ideology than the previous guy. And the new guy thinks that it's completely okay for somebody that is selling you internet service to mine your personal data and browsing history and sell that in whole or in aggregate or whatever, commercialize that however they see fit. And because of that, companies were like, yeah, we're going to do some really amazing stuff with that. It's going to be great. And so other people stood up and said, wait, you're going to sell my browsing history? That's not cool. I need a VPN or whatever. Other people said, wait, why don't we try to buy Congress's browsing history, because, you know, of course Verizon or you know, Comcast or AT&T or whoever is going to totally sell that browsing history to you to the highest bidder. No, the Comcast system has special stuff. It's like, this person is an important person. Treat them better. That's an actual field in their system. So yeah, that we were like, there's no way that's going to happen.
And that did happen. There were GoFundMes and other initiatives where people did send money. If you're one of those people,
dumbest thing ever.
Feel sorry for you. But somebody has come up with a free and novel way to do the same thing.
This is amazing. So this is a tracking widget you as a webmaster or you as someone in control of a website can deploy on your website, and it will phone home only when it sees a congressional IP address. So if somebody from Congress is browsing your website or doing something with your website, it can be reported to a central repository. If enough people are serious about this that run web servers and things like that, then this script can be injected on those pages, and we will know what Congress's browsing history is. And there's nothing illegal about it because, hey, that's a thing. So this is a much more appropriate solution to addressing that problem.
So how long do you think before there's some sort of movement? It's like, we have to get VPNs on all of Congress's connections.
I'd say they'll probably just seize the servers. Like, they'll probably just call the feds and be like, these guys did find something these guys did wrong. Yeah. Just seize it and figure it out later.
Hopefully this guy decentralizes all that. You know, like you could mirror it or whatever.
That would be ideal. It's sad that we're this cynical, but hey, we've witnessed these things happen. So
I hope that somebody from the Pornhub team is watching. Get this on there immediately. 4chan, we need it on 4chan as well. Oh, what's another great site that we could catch?
Oh, that wasn't me. That was a staffer. That was totally a staffer. To do that. You heard it here first. I really think that we will get appropriate privacy protection just as soon as something happens, like the whole VHS rental thing. There was a thing where some politician rented porn at a video rental store, and there was no law against getting somebody's rental records, and so then, of course, it became a law because that's embarrassing. So, however we can turn the internet browsing history into an embarrassment for people in power, the quicker this gets fixed.
Well, there were some major updates from E3 in the gaming world, and not all of them were exciting new games.
This E3 was just weird. Like, I don't know. I'm not really, like, super into gaming, but even this E3 was really weird for me. And the first story that we have is GTA. There's a GTA modding thing called Open 4 that has been shut down. And sort of, this is like a back and forth a little bit between Take-Two, which is the parent company of Rockstar that makes GTA 5, 4 and 5, and this open modding thing. Now, this mod is for the offline version of GTA 5, but in Take-Two's takedown notice, the lawyer sent a thing and said, no, you need to stop doing this. It's sort of, you know, generic lawyery language. But they said that their problem is because it interferes with online gameplay. And so what actually happened is some other people not affiliated with Open 4 use Open 4 as part of their harassment toolkit in order to harass people online. And so Take-Two is like, well, just take it all down.
And the real irony here is part of, at least I would say maybe 5 to 10% of the success of GTA when it first came out were all these incredible animated GIFs that showed up on Imgur and Reddit of like the dog and the flying motorcycle, and they had the Iron Man mod. They had all these really cool things.
The Knight Rider mod.
Yeah, people were doing really cool things with this. And Rockstar was just tweeting them out. Check this out. This is amazing. While the publisher comes behind, it's like, we will destroy you. It's a weird... I don't think Rockstar is... I don't think they're going to come out publicly and say, hey, Take-Two is wrong because money. But I don't think this is from them at all. It's definitely just the publisher.
Rockstar needs to buy themselves from Take-Two and just continue on their own, because this is like one of the dumbest things that I've seen a game company do, because like it's probably not too late. Here is how you can fix the situation, Take-Two. What you need to do, one, call up the modders of Open 4, talk to them, don't just send a lawyergram and say, look, we're cool with modding, we would like you to make these changes so that it's harder for people to harass the people in the online version, or hey, this is the specific situation that we encountered where people in the online version were being harassed and your software was involved. What can we do to let you continue on with Open 4 in an offline way, but that we can be sure that it's not going to be used in future versions to harass online players? Oh, and because we're such stupid people for having done what we did. Here's $10,000 US for you to employ developer time to do this, which is a pittance for a company like that.
Well, they mentioned the stat. So when that game came out, what, like 2015?
Yeah, yeah.
So last year, it made $750 million. Last year.
I'm just telling you, this is the formula for fixing it. If Take-Two were serious about fixing this, they could do that. And then maybe, and so like people have gone crazy on Steam. It's got an overwhelmingly negative rating now.
And there's a boyfight. So if you're if you want to participate, stop playing GTA right now, because
I don't understand why everybody always has such a hard time coming up with a reasonable solution to their problems. They always just go nuclear, go off the deep end, lose their damn mind, and then, you know, blame the victim. I mean, also, that's just what always, it's crazy.
Also, we played a fair amount of GTA on the Twitch stream. There are hackers everywhere. Yeah. I mean, you can't play a single game. That thing is so ripe with people exploiting the online somehow. Hell, the genie's out of the bottle. And I don't think they're doing a whole lot to try to fix it, other than
sending poorly worded lawyer letters that did not research the problem at all.
Right.
Well, in other gaming news, the Atari CEO has confirmed they're not out of the console game yet. They're making a console. They're doing hardware.
Now, don't get excited about, you know, the Atari X coming out to compete with modern hardware. This is almost surely a response to Nintendo's, what do they call the little baby Nintendo?
The NES Classic.
Yeah, the NES Classic. I think they saw the kind of sales that thing got and were like, oh, we could do that. That's just emulation, right? Let's just go get the ROMs off the internet like you did. That costs almost nothing. We must do this immediately. So I would expect the Atari Classic.
That is exactly what is going to happen. It's just going to be like a little Atari. And, you know, Walmart and other companies are already selling those. I'm not sure if it's licensed or what, but...
Oh, it's like, instead of selling you Pitfall, it's like Pit Jumper?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's so easy to copy those.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of games and weird stuff going on in the industry, apparently in the Japanese game industry, if you get on the wrong list, you can't get health insurance.
So Hideo Kojima is the man behind the Metal Gear series. Is Silent Hill his too?
I want to say that he had something to do with it.
He's a name, like if you're into video games, you actually might know his name. Because you don't usually know the director of a video game. It's not like Michael Bay. But this guy, people know his name. He's that, you know, famous, especially in Japan. And he famously left Konami because he didn't like them and they're terrible and they wouldn't let him do what he wanted. And so they've decided to get revenge in some interesting ways.
One of the things that they did was his new game studio, they wouldn't let him get health insurance. But wait, how does that... Well, one of the executives on Konami is also on the board of the health insurance company, and they were like, no, we're not going to cover you. We're not going to insure your new company. Your health insurance for your employees, no.
The other thing is, if you left Konami to go and work for him, which he took his team with him, they have now blacklisted all those people with all the other game companies in Japan. So those people are finding that when they apply for those jobs, Konami is telling them, you must not list us on your CV or resume, because if they call us, we're going to tell them you're terrible.
Wow. Just wow. I mean, I can't believe the industry would operate that way.
Well, I mean, if you've seen some of the other stuff Konami's done, that's real easy to guess.
They've gotten too big to be not broken up. I mean, that's like monopolistic levels.
It's funny because, like, Konami, they've come up with a new Metal Gear game where it's like a Metal Gear zombie apocalypse, and it's kind of pathetic. And they asked Kojima if he had anything to do with it, and he sort of, like, smirked and said no. And to Konami, that was like murdering their children. I think this is all in response to that. It's like, oh, no, you must be destroyed.
You've dishonored the game company. Wow. Just, I don't know. Switching gears a little bit again. In Bangalore, scientists are using drones to plant seeds, but they're doing 10,000 acres a week, which is unheard of.
These are areas where you can't get traditional machinery and stuff like that because they're mountains. It would cost an insane amount of money, and you would probably trample a bunch of forests to get to plant the forests. And if you used a regular plane, the fuel cost and all that would be ridiculous. So they're looking at drones, and it turns out drones are pretty good at dropping seeds.
And pretty effective. There's apparently a river that runs like 4 months of the year, and the area was historically forested, but some changes in, I guess, the way that the water works and stuff like that meant that Maybe the trees were cut down. I don't know. They think that the ecological, the root problem was man-made, but they're going to try to fix it by planting a whole bunch of seeds and restoring plant life to the area.
And interestingly, when they drop these seeds, they don't just drop a seed. They drop a seed packed in manure, packed in dirt. So it's like a ready-made seed bomb. Now, unfortunately, they haven't gotten a system to drop these like intermittently because they just dump them. But they're working on new technology. They're trying to get investors to, you know, drop them over a certain area slowly or whatever. But if you can reforest the place with drones, it's probably pretty cheap. I mean, the
10,000 a week, 10,000 acres a week is nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, and the seeds are probably cheap, and that's a pretty cool thing. I wonder if, like, what other place? Do we have any place in America we could reforest with that kind of technology?
Maybe somewhere out west, but I'm drawing a blank. I don't know. Seems like there's a lot of places where erosion, rapid erosion, has caused soil problems. Maybe that would work there.
They also, another thing they haven't figured out is how do you keep the wildlife from just eating these seeds?
Oh, yeah. Well, the manure?
I think they just pick it off. It'd be like the raccoon and wash it in the stream.
Well, in other news, China has set the record for spooky action at a distance. They're using a satellite and quantum entanglement for secure quantum communication, or secure key exchange, to be sure that a key has not been tampered with. Now, this is just experimental. They're not actually using it yet. But the technology is working pretty well. They got to use it at night, but they're sending entangled photons to two different destinations, and then that are about 1,200 kilometers apart, and then measuring the photons at each location, and they are opposite polarizations more often than the pure chance would dictate. So that suggests that entanglement is at work.
And the problem is, I think what the 6 in a million. Actually made it.
It was like 600 out of a billion photons that were sent.
Yeah, so it's not great. But the cool thing that could come from this is that this could be used as a key. And because of the nature of the quantum thing, if someone ever looks at the key, then they know immediately because someone looked at it. Observation is what reveals it. It's an amazing thing.
Now, there's a reflector on the moon. It was put there by the people that landed on the moon, that you can shoot a laser at just the right place on the moon, and if you've got a reflector set up, you can actually detect some of your photons coming back from the moon to your detector. I wonder if somebody could do that to outdo them on the distance record. That would be a lot of fun. It takes a really powerful laser to do that, though.
It's probably pretty expensive. But
I want to do it. I want the record. I want it. That can be our new Patreon goal.
The cool thing about this is this sort of thing doesn't travel very well in the atmosphere because it breaks down, but in space it does. So if they could figure this out, we would have super, super secure space-based satellite internet.
Space-based photonic, you know, communication. We need to be able to do it, though, with not geosynchronous satellites because they're too far away. We need low Earth orbit satellites, which is sort of a mesh technology, and I think a point-to-point situation like with a laser is probably not going to be ideal with the satellites that close, because I'm not willing to tolerate geosynchronous orbit levels of latency.
Gotta play StarCraft with photons.
Playing StarCraft with 1 second of latency, that would be bad. I would be real upset. I don't think I would like that. And you've come to the end of another episode of the news. Oh, this one ran a little long. 1 hour and 15 minutes.
Oh, wow.
It's fine. You're probably all right. Most people weren't paying attention by now anyway. Yeah. It's fine. We'll see you next week. And then we'll probably have a little bit more news about X99, but not too much because it's not ready yet. I mean, it's a little bit ready, but you can't actually buy one until the 26th, I think, maybe. I don't know. We'll figure that out. See ya.